This is a live recording of a webinar by Ron Baker of the VeriSage Institute, given to clients of More Software in the UK on the 7th of February 2008. Trashing the timesheets.
Thank you, Craig, and thank you, everybody, for joining me at the end of your day. It's kind of the beginning of mine here. I'm in Northern California, and I'm just honored to be here and have the opportunity to share what I think is very revolutionary. And it's this idea of trashing the timesheet. Craig, I'm assuming that everybody can see the PowerPoints up on the screen. Is that a fair assumption? And let's just dive right in. What replaces timesheets? This idea that you can't get rid of timesheets because we need them for pricing. I think we've absolutely demolished that argument. If you were involved in the last teleseminar, you heard our philosophies on pricing. Another argument for timesheets is, well, we need them for cost accounting purposes because we have to know if we're making money on a project or we have to know if we're making money on a client. We've thoroughly demolished that argument, and I will do more of that during this call. And usually the third defense of the timesheet, and there's even a fourth defense, the third defense is we need them for cost accounting purposes. Which is absolute nonsense. There's other ways to do cost accounting other than keeping timesheets. Another argument is we need them for project management. This is also nonsense because project management never looks backwards. It always looks forward to project the use of resources. So all of these things I will weave into this presentation, but those are the common defenses we hear for timesheets. And so let's just start right out of the gate by sharing with you what over 500 firms now, and there may be more, but those are roughly that we know about, that have trashed timesheets. What have they replaced them with? And, of course, the most important thing is value pricing, or you could call it price-led costing. We went over this in great detail in the last call on value pricing. Project management. Firms that have gotten rid of timesheets have put more emphasis on project management, even possibly to the extent of having a project manager oversee all of the firm's projects, somebody who allocates resources, who sets up deadlines and takes into account risk and capacity and other issues that are intricately involved with project management. It's actually becoming a separate skill. Because once you get rid of timesheets that do nothing but look backwards and tell you what's already been done, project management actually helps you look forward. The other thing that is important, we think, in order to get rid of timesheets is to replace them with key predictive indicators. These are not performance indicators. These are predictive indicators. And since this is probably the biggest component of getting rid of timesheets, I've decided to spend our hour today focusing primarily on those. So I'm not going to be talking about these other things unless there's part of Q&A about them. Another thing that replaces timesheets are after-action reviews and before-action reviews. These are concepts borrowed from the United States military, specifically the Army, but it's an incredibly valuable device in a knowledge firm where the transmission and sharing of knowledge is what is creating wealth. After-action reviews basically look at a situation, look at a client case or project after the fact and say, okay, what happened here? Why didn't it go as we planned? What were the problems? How can we do better next time? Very simple questions that are stored somewhere, either on a video or a conference call like this or whatever, that people can reuse again so as not only not to make the same mistakes but to constantly improve. This is something now that Toyota uses, and it's part of its Toyota production system and other firms as well. Before action reviews are kind of the same thing, but rather than being an autopsy, they actually do the same kind of process before the project or the client engagement begins. So we think those are also a critical component to this. The other thing, of course, is using fixed price agreements and change orders, and that's all part of the value pricing, which we talked about on the last call. And probably another very important thing is to have somebody like a chief value officer and or a pricing committee, cartel, council, panel, whatever you want to call it, that actually takes over the pricing function and can also do some of these other tasks as well. So Given that we're going to dive right into key predictive indicators, I want to tell you what that means, why we draw a distinction between a key performance indicator and a key predictive indicator, why that distinction is absolutely critical, and how it kind of folds in to this idea of getting rid of timesheets. So let's just start with this. Are canaries more valuable than accountants? Now, the interesting thing about coal miners back in the days in the 1880s and, you know, turn of the century, is they put canaries in coal mines. They brought them down in wooden cages down there, and the canaries were kind of a leading indicator if there was going to be safety problems in the coal mine, because they were very sensitive to noxious and poisonous gases. So if the miners saw the canary tip over and die, that was a leading indicator that they needed to get out of there. Now, the important thing about that is leading indicators help us predict the future. They help us peer into the future. If you think about a financial statement, as one of my clients told me when I had my own practice here, he said, Baker, to use your annual financial statements that you give me to run my business is the equivalent of timing my cookies with my smoke alarm. And that's kind of that's the best definition I've ever heard of a lagging indicator. What we want is we want leading indicators, because here's the critical difference. According to Clayton Christensen, the only way to look into the future is use theories, since conclusive data is only available about the past. Now, if you think about that, the past is data, it's information, it's a measurement. You can go out and golf and you can measure your score, but that's not necessarily going to change your score. And it's only going to tell you what happened in the past. It's going to give you no idea about what's going to happen into the future, unless your theory is that the future is going to equal the past. I think that theory is very close to being dangerous in our fast-changing world. So rather than just sitting around measuring things because we can measure them, we have to tie the measurement to a specific theory that helps us peer into the future. And by the way, this is a great book, Seeing What's Next by Clayton Christensen. He really does do a great job explaining this. I'm going to be recommending some books over the course of the program that I think are very thought-provoking, and this is certainly one of them. So let's talk about what this means. The McKinsey Maxim, and that's where this line comes from, basically from the famed consulting house, basically says what you can measure, you can manage. Now, this is a line that I used to repeat like a parrot to my clients. I used to believe in it fervently. I was taught it in school. When I worked as a cost accountant, I believed it. I really subscribed to this. Well, I kind of did a mea culpa, and I wrote an entire book, Measure What Matters to Customers, to refute specifically this maxim. This maxim is nonsense. It's nonsense on stilts. We can't change something by measuring it more frequently. It's like arguing that I can change my weight if I have more accurate scales or if I weigh myself more frequently. It's not the measurement that matters. It's the process that is behind the measurement. You know, you don't improve your golf game by measuring your score more accurately. You improve your golf game by changing your swing or changing the process. Now, this has got grave implications for what we measure in our accounting firms. I'm not trying to be flippant here. I mean, this whole book is dedicated to this topic, and I'm only going to be able to excerpt, you know, the highlights from it. But I really want to strongly make this point, that this idea that just because you can measure something, you can manage it, is absolute nonsense. It truly is. I can't stress this firmly enough. I've changed my mind on this. It took me a long time to do it, but I finally did. Let me show you why. Because if you look at measurements in them without context, without driven by a theory, can lead to just nonsensical conclusions. Take my colleague Ed Kless here. A couple years ago, they had a son, Sean. And he sent me this picture on the day that they had the baby. And look how happy they are. They've got this new baby boy. And I asked Ed, being the accountant that I am, I said, Ed, why are you and Christine so happy? Your per capita income of your family just dropped by one-third. Now, folks, that's an accurate measurement. Their family income per capita dropped by one-third. There's no denying that the algebra's there. But the fact of the matter is, without the context of knowing the joy of bringing a human life into the world, you reach just a nonsensical conclusion from a stupid measurement that's not guided by any context or judgment or theory. And this is what I'm arguing that the timesheet is. Tracking a knowledge worker's billable hours tells you nothing about that knowledge worker's quality. It tells you nothing about their attitude. It tells you nothing about all the most important characteristics of being a successful accountant. So that's why we think they're the wrong measurements. So if we look at key predictive indicators, again, as opposed to performance indicators, and performance indicators, remember, are just nothing but measurements of the past. Predictive indicators are measurements, but they're measurements tied to a theory that helps us peer into the future. And this is actually something that's been around for a long time. Economists have been using predictive indicators forever. Now, they call them economic indicators, but they're really predictive indicators. And if you look at how an economist classifies different indicators to, say, judge where the economy is, you know, the talk right now, at least in the U.S., is are we in a recession? Are we heading into one? Are we in one? Whatever. Well, economists have various indicators to try and test this. And the famous ones are lagging indicators, things like the unemployment rate, the prime rate, things like this. And there's more in each category. I'm just giving you a couple of examples. But these are lagging indicators. These help us determine where the economy has been. They're very much like financial statements. They look backwards. They tell us what they've been. Now, I'm not saying that's not valuable. I'm not saying that they're not needed. I'm saying that they are lagging, showing us where we've been. They give us no future direction. They don't tell us where we're going, unless, again, your theory is that the future is going to equal the past. And that extrapolation, I think, is usually off the mark. Then there's coincident indicators, things like personal income, manufacturing, trade sales, things like this that show economists where the economy is right now. It's kind of like a balance sheet. It shows you where your business is at that point in time. But then there's leading indicators, things like manufacturing new orders, building permits, venture capital, these other things that help us say, okay, this is what's going to happen based on some of these leading indicators. Now, these indicators have been developed because they test them as a theory. They say, look, if we track manufacturing new orders, if we track building permits, do they help us say that the economy is picking up, it's going to get better into the future? That's something that can be empirically tested. Now, if you're interested in these, you can go to the conferenceboard.org website, and this is the official body, at least here in the States. I'm sure there's one in the UK. I don't know what it is. That determines whether or not our country is in a recession. And you can see how they use all of these different indicators. There's probably 12 or 13 in each category. Now, forget about trying to predict the economy. As you know, as The Economist, one of my favorite magazines, you know, from your country, loves to say, you know, economists have predicted the last 20 out of the last four recessions. We can't do it. It's very hard to predict a $13 trillion economy. So let's bring this down into a business, or let's bring it down to an accounting firm. We have lagging indicators in almost all businesses. They're called financial statements. Even if you had real-time financial statements that could be, you know, done and the books could close instantaneously after every single transaction, after every check was cut, you would have coincident indicators. But what businesses want, what businesses need, and by the way, I think this is an enormous opportunity for accountants to consult on with their clients, are leading indicators. What indicators help a company peer into the future about how it's going to perform financially? And in order to do that, you have to develop a theory. The lagging indicators are the effect. They're the tip of the iceberg. It's the leading indicators that are the cause. This is basic scientific method, cause and effect, theory. Theory deals with cause and effect. We're looking for the leading indicators that drive the lagging indicators, whether that be sales, profit, gross profit, doesn't matter. So let me give you a Gedanken, as the Germans say, a thought experiment. I'm going to use Continental, but I could easily be talking about British Airways. I could easily be talking about